I'm Shanti. Welcome to another episode of Awakening with the Brahma Kumaris. Today we're going to talk about self-empowerment. And as we've heard, power sometimes has a negative connotation. We try and control somebody else. We wield power. It makes us feel strong in a sense. But what about power of myself? Do I have enough control over myself? Do I check myself enough? And it's only if I have control over myself can I exert a positive control over somebody else. And with us to expand on that, we have Brother Anthony from Greece.
Om Shanti, Brother Anthony.
What do you mean by self-empowerment and how do we get there?
Well, I think first of all, we'll probably have to define what power is in spiritual terms. In Raja Yoga, when we speak of spiritual power, what we mean is to be aware of our inner system, our thoughts, our attitudes, our feelings, and of course also our values, and to make sure that they're at a level not just of positivity for one's own self, but how they can give benefit to others. And deep inner power means not to be able to be influenced by external situations, to be able to remain in a stable self-respect, for example, when somebody's insulting you or defaming you. And this inner power means to also be able to think quickly of solutions, not to be overcome by situations.
So sometimes it happens that if you're having a conflict with somebody and you say, okay, I have the inner power to step back. A lot of people say that's almost like being a coward. So what's the difference there also?
Because
shouldn't I stand up for myself and say I'm right?
But I'm not stepping back, I'm stepping in. And when I step in, it gives me space. And it's not that I step in to stay in, I step in order to understand better, to clarify, to become equipped. So that actually when I do step out, then I'm able to face the situation constructively.
So is it also like if I want to lead somebody, is there a difference in wanting to lead somebody somewhere and having power over them?
Well, you see, leading, I don't know about this word. I mean, I can only lead myself. I can lead my mind to peace. I can lead my feelings to forgiveness, to patience. I can lead my intellect to an openness to understand the other. And then when I'm leading myself, then what we say after that is actually then we serve others rather than lead others. Because, serving means I respect their space, I understand their potential. Because if I'm leading them according to my own agenda, what I think is right for them, it may not be. I have to be very, very aware of where they're at. You know, I'll never have that sensitivity or even to think that I should be aware of where the others are at if I have not developed that awareness of myself where I'm at.
So it's wonderful what you said. There's a difference between serving somebody and leading somebody. A lot of the times at home, when you're in a home environment, you want to lead your children. But there's a difference in serving them. I think that's a wonderful point you made.
Because also the whole point is example. You can't there's a certain age where you can't keep correcting and teaching. There's it will only be the power of your own example that will inspire others.
Yeah.
And they see, yes, you're doing what you are saying. So they trust it. Because you see, again, a person who has self-empowerment and is true to their own values and own principles, that creates a trust in others. And when there's a trust in others, they are more willing, they are more open.
I was just getting to that. So when you say, when you wield power, you lose their trust in a certain way because they disassociate themselves from you.
Because also, people that wield power, usually it's from insecurity. They want to dominate others. And one way I notice that people who wield power, whether it's people or institutions, they create a feeling of inferiority or littleness in others. And and sometimes even feelings of guilt that you're not up to this standard. And it's, that's a way of controlling. They disempower others so that they can have power over them. And this is not the way human life is supposed to be.
So basically somebody who's not secure about their own control and power in their mind are sort of looking for that by demeaning wielding power over somebody else, and that's just temporary. Because deep down inside, when you go back home, you still don't really feel like a success.
No, because wielding power of others, and we get back to that same point of insecurity. It could be, you know, when sometimes people, they're not realizing that they're insecure. They think that they're actually okay.
Exactly. So many people think, I'm powerful, but, you know, deep down somewhere they aren't, and they don't even know it yet.
And this is the thing, that if you have to use a lot of force, if you have to use a lot of manipulation, if you have to use threats over others, then something is wrong. For example, I threaten my child, you know. They may stay quiet and out of fear for, you know, a moment, a month, 2 or 3 years, but that doesn't cultivate respect in the relationship. And sometimes this is the problem with people who wield this wrong power, is that then the long-term effect of that is that they will not listen after a while.
Mm.
They don't have, you know, trust. I remember one lady coming to me at school with her child. She says, you know, I've told my child 100,000 times to be quiet.
Mm.
The very fact that she said it, I've told them so often. And I wasn't sure whether I should tell her or not. But I said, the fact that you have to say it 100,000 times.
It's making you speak 100,000 times.
Plus, she was not quiet when she was even telling me. So it was a direction, but another message was being sent.
Mm.
So a powerful person is coherent. A spiritually powerful person is coherent. You know, what they are thinking, what they are saying, what they are doing, it makes sense to others. And a lot of people now are very disillusioned with hypocrisy, whether it's in the family, whether it's in, you know, the country, whether it's in religion, whether it's in politics. They don't, you know, they don't trust so easily.
It's so true. Even small scale power, like we see in our own homes, mostly it's a patriarchal society that I've seen personally, and you're so scared of your parents that you end up lying to them so much. And that just multiplies one lie to another, and by the time they're 25, it's another story altogether, and that's probably not the child's fault.
Mm.
He was so scared of his parents in the first place that he had to lie. And then on the grander scale, I mean, politics, we all see that every day.
But usually, you know, in close relationships, sometimes if there's not an openness, there's a lot of hide and seek.
Mm.
You know, I do something, and then I hide it.
Hmm.
You know, this is not the way, though, that relationships or society can go forward. But see, the problem is that we have a lot of blind spots, and we don't see what we are doing. And this is the whole point of spiritual power. A person who is spiritually in power can see into themselves.
Hmm.
Now, what am I doing now? Like, I say something, and everybody's reacting. Now, if many people have complaints about me, it should be a signal for me to look in and see what is happening.
Not feel like a victim, because a lot of times we say, everybody's got complaints against me, I'm a victim. And you shrink into a corner and you blame everybody else. But
this is, see, I don't have the power to face.
Hmm.
I don't have the power of humility and self-respect to look into myself and say, okay, if so many people have this opinion, maybe there is something I should change.
Mm.
Not to feel guilty. You see, spiritual knowledge, real spiritual knowledge is not to make me feel guilty, but it creates a conscience inside where I can start to say, okay, this is not good behavior. This is not appropriate behavior. And then try to, you know, see where change can take place. You know, a strong person becomes strong because they start to be honest with themselves. I mean, all spiritual knowledge, whether from India, from Greece, from Egypt, It was to make a person's life happier. That's the point of knowledge. It's to be happier, to be freer, and to have a good relationship with others. And a lot of spiritual teachings have lost their power. Not because it's not powerful in itself, but people think they are doing it, but they're not really doing it. They're not really putting it into practice.
So they like the idea of spiritual power.
Mm.
They love the idea of it, but you know, half the people don't know how to practice it.
Yes.
How do we put it into practical use? When I wake up in the morning, how do I deal with my day and empower myself more and more every day? How do I do that?
For example, at the beginning of the day and during the day, what are my first thoughts when I wake up? How do I use my time, my breath, you know, during the day? And this is where meditation is so much, it recharges. Often we feel unsupported, we feel that sometimes very much alone, and we'll go through this.
Okay.
But I remember being advised once by a senior yogi on Mount Abu. She said, always go to, if you do have a problem, go to someone who will, who's very neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go to your best friend because they will agree with you. Because sometimes
we love going to our best friends. Pick up the phone and just
and talk about someone. This one did this to me, and you know the other one will agree with you, so you feel confirmed.
And you feel a certain sense of solace in your misery. You feel like your misery has been stamped upon, and now I have the right to feel it because the other one thinks so.
Yes, yes, this other person is really bad. They've done the same thing to me. But this is not a solution.
Hmm.
You know, I've plugged into the wrong socket. I'm not getting any power then. And it's all a matter of getting the right power into the self.
So how do I get that power? I mean, what is my switch? How do I get that power?
I have to be able to really actually plug into my original self and also plug into the Supreme Source and have another energy circulating in me rather than the energy that is all around me. Because all the energy that is around me has a lot of mixture. It's not that it's all bad, but there's lots of mixture of good and bad. And unless you're very, very sharp, unless you have very good discernment, you can't always see. And we are very addicted to things. You know, we have so many images from advertising, TV, magazines, you know, all these things are there that sometimes I don't have the compass to really know what is the right thing to do, you know. Because, you know, for example, a good mother uses this detergent all the time. A successful man has this type of car. Yeah, this is an addiction, you know. And so we have certain images and role models that are addictive in the society. You know that they made a study once, and they found out that most men, after they retire, usually die. But they don't live for much a lot longer.
Why so?
Well, this is what they've tried to look at. It's not just the DNA or just the chromosomes. And what they discovered was that actually if they found out that men who had other interests besides just their work usually lived longer. Hmm? We say in English, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And so what happens is, for many people, they equate success with a particular image and a particular way of acting, and they don't open to anything else. They have become subtly addicted. You know, sometimes we think of addictions as drugs, as alcohol, as smoking.
Those are the big ones.
They're the big ones, but there's very subtle ones that interfere in our quality of life. And unfortunately, in the world now, it's on a global level, we are presented with many addictive images. And so people plug into this, and they get, you know, oh well, yes, I'm a successful businessman, or I'm a successful whatever it is, if I have this, this, and this, and this. In silence, in meditation, I sit quiet and I examine. And this is on a daily level. People think that meditation is philosophical, meditation is only for a few yogis, but silence and the ability to reflect and examine where I'm going is for everyone on a daily basis.
But we actually live without silence, don't we, every day? There's not a minute that you have when you're silent, because even if I'm sitting in a room, I'm sitting alone, but I have so many thoughts running to my head. When I go to sleep, it takes me 2 hours to sleep because I'm reflecting over the day. So I really have never had the silent time.
You see, to reflect over the day, to see how I could do things better, how I can be better, is okay. But to reflect in a circular way, oh, this was wrong, this shouldn't have happened, and just blaming, whether it's myself or others, doesn't empower. I can reflect, but then see, okay, for tomorrow, what is it I change? You know, how do I change? The way I look at somebody, the way I feel about somebody. See, a person who empowers themselves makes this exercise. It's not enough just to go to the temple and pray. It's not enough just to go to the church and light the candle. I mean, the real candle is inside myself, you know, and light, the light of honesty. You know, I'm honest that I want to develop better relationships. I don't wait for the other to change. Let me change. See, a strong person, a powerful person will do that. I have to change. But they won't feel the burden. Some people would have told themselves, well, why should I? I mean, it's their fault.
For me, yeah. Let them change. I'm good.
No, but nobody's 100% good. We say it takes two to tango. You know, we all have a part, you know, in creating a situation. We all play some part, minor or major. But again, you see, I can be addictive to this I'm right image, the justice image, a lot, you know.
Does it happen
fair.
To you? I mean, since you are so much into yoga, into Raj Yoga, does it happen to you? Do you think I'm right because I'm on the right path, I'm studying yoga? Do you always think that I'm right? Do you get stuck there?
No, you have to always be a student. I mean, and if you do that, your path of spirituality closes, the doors close. Because if you start to develop any type of subtle arrogance, whether it's on a spiritual path, whether it is as a mother or father, whether it is as a teacher, whether it's a director, if I don't keep open and really listen to other people, then I'll be blocked.
But then, you know, talking about teachers, you have an addiction to your role as a teacher, you have an addiction in schools to your role as a headmaster, headmistress.
Yes.
How do you break free from that and just...
Well, I learned that I am not my role. I am not my body. Roles are necessary for certain works to be done. My body is necessary for expression. But I am not that. Because a role will end, won't it? I might always be the headmaster. You know, children grow up and create their own lives. You know, things change.
Then what are you at the end of that?
Yes.
When you go back home, then?
I am a soul. You know, I'm a spiritual being. And there was a very famous saying by Socrates in Greece, and he said, until you realize your divinity, you can never be a proper human being. So I think this is where we're at. I think all spiritual traditions in every country speak of this divinity, this essence, this eternal essence which makes each one of us very, very valuable. But what happens is there's so much identity with the social and the cultural and the role or whatever it is, that is forgotten. So you asked before, where do you plug in? You plug into this, and meditation is for this, to plug into this, to get away from the addictive images. I mean, it's not always advertising, it's also tradition, you know.
It's cultivation, we're cultivated to be like that, where you're born.
Yes, but this is the whole point of real meditation and silence. I plug into the socket of what I really am, and also I plug into God.
How do you do that? What do you do for that? I mean, I've heard the term meditation so much, but then I don't really know exactly how you do it.
Well, for the first question about, God also, I don't think you have to go into any philosophical things. You know, just there is a source of benevolent energy, very democratic, available to everybody. Doesn't matter your culture, doesn't matter your label, doesn't matter your age, your gender, it's available. I think it's very important to understand this, the universality of the Supreme Source.
So it's been there all the time.
All the time.
I haven't plugged in.
Haven't plugged in, or plugged in the wrong way, because I've gotten wrong, sometimes not quite accurate information.
Hmm.
And it's an easy way to understand it is like a lighthouse. Huh? The lighthouse is there, giving light to all the ships. It will not say.
It's not selective.
Not selective. Oh, here's a Chinese ship. Oh, I'm giving light.
It's shining over everything. It doesn't choose one flower to shine on.
Yes. And the thing is that the flower has to respond as the ship must. The flower responds to the sunlight. The ship must respond to the lighthouse. It's guiding. And so it's the same way. I need to respond. I don't need many ideas. Just this source of benevolent energy that is my eternal parent, my eternal friend, and a trust.
So how do you do this every day while you're working?
When
you sit down for a minute and what do you do?
I have to get away from the addiction of the computer.
Hmm. Very important.
The addiction of the world at work.
Hmm.
The stress and pressure, because that becomes has become also a habit, sometimes addictive habit, to be stressed.
You're addicted to stress. You're so right. A lot of people, if you don't have a stressful day, you just don't know what wrong.
Yes, and for many people, you have to appear busy all the time. Otherwise, you're not functional.
And also, the boss won't think that you're working if you're not chewing on your pencil enough. You know, it's almost like that.
Yeah. So we don't need a lot of time to plug in.
Hmm.
You need just a few seconds. The point is to remember to do it. So what do you do? You think, you know, there's one breath, one thought, 1 second. You know, in 1 second, you usually have one thought. So just imagine 1 minute, 60 seconds, 60 thoughts. It's a lot. So if you really want to relax, you have to reduce the amount of thinking. So how do you begin? You begin from the basics. The very basic, like in the body. What's the basics of a body? It's a cell. You know, cancer begins with one cell going wrong. Yeah? The body keeps alive through one heartbeat, one breath, always going like this. Time, second, then a minute, then an hour, then a day, you know, then a week, then a month, then a year, then a century, right? There are expansions. But let's, in meditation, at work or anywhere, I go back to the basic unit.
So you just take a minute off and you sit.
Second, begin with a second.
Make
it easier. Make it easier. You know, just a few seconds. I go within, I plug in, and how do I do that? Just one, let's say 1 second, I am. That's a thought. And it's connected with your breath, in a way. Let's say a few seconds. But you've got to be very attentive. You have to be present in that. Not thinking, the computer's going, the boss might come
in. Yeah, what if my eyes are shut and somebody walks by me?
Yeah, you don't have to shut your eyes even. You can keep your eyes open. In just a few seconds. It's like you've put a brake on the circulation of your thoughts, your activities. You've just stopped. So, I am a soul. I am peace. I feel the peace go through all of my being. That's all you need. Now, if you've got more time, you can do it again. But it's very important to do this slowly. Otherwise it becomes a technique. This is not a technique. This is an understanding and then a feeling. I've got to be present there. Otherwise, I won't get rid of my addiction of stress, of rush, and of push. Because rush and push, it has become an addiction now. So it's a matter of exercise, it's a matter of practicing this. And what is so difficult? The only difficulty is I forget. That's the only difficulty. It's not that I don't know, but that I forget.
Is learn.
Yes.
But somehow I think we need a little bit of unlearning.
Unlearning, yes. Relearning and remembering.
Hmm.
I've got to remember.
So wonderful, Brother Anthony. Thank you so much for giving us this lovely message today that I think all of us at the end of this show should start.
Yes. It's easy, isn't it?
It really is. I hope we all do it. Thank you so much, Brother Anthony.
Thank you.
Om Shanti.
Om Shanti.
I think what I got out of this right now was that if within maybe every hour I just take a few seconds out, and even with my eyes open, I'm fully there in those few seconds, and I just de-stress, be without thought, and think, okay, I'm tapping in my energy from somewhere. I'm getting the power. I am powerful. I am a soul, and I'm a good soul. I think when you have that, you sort of forget the whole day's tension, which is probably surrounding you at that moment, and you go somewhere else. So when you come back from that, you're completely new, you're refreshed, you've been plugged into that source of energy, and you're perfectly fine. I think maybe a lot of us can start doing that right after this, right now. If you have any questions or any queries, anything you'd like to know from us or share with us, we'd love to hear from you. Please do call us or email us at. If you wish to discuss your problem or have a question to ask or want to know your nearest Raj Yoga Meditation Center, write to us now.